Call the meeting to order. Members, please take your seats and if I could have a motion for the minutes of the last meeting.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vogel moves the minutes. Discussion for the minutes. Hearing done, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We've adopted the minutes. Representative Houseman has asked to be excused. Please note that. Thanks. Welcome to the evening committee. Members, I'm only going to keep us here till about 8:45. I don't believe in late meetings, but because of the difficulty of scheduling time during the day lately for these last couple weeks, I hope you'll indulge us with a good hour of testimony here as we move some of these bills along. The first bill on the agenda tonight is House File 387, and Representative Kelly for, I believe, an extension of a diversion pilot program. Representative Kelly is not on the committee. If I could have a member move it, and we're going to move it to the general register, and we'll also hold it for possible inclusion omnibus bill. But Representative Sanders?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 387. Be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register.
Thank you. We have the bill in front of us. Representative Kelly, welcome to the committee. Would you like to take a moment to explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and certainly appreciate your time this evening. It's been a long day, so we'll be brief, but I believe this the bill in front of you is something that we can all look at today and feel very proud of. I have with me Mr. Scott Atkinson, who's the president of Diversion Solutions, and Jessica McConaughey, who is assistant city attorney for St. Paul. This program is actually a pilot program that we started a couple years ago, and it really has been a grand success. I'll let Mr. Atkinson explain exactly what we're doing here briefly, and then we'll stand for questions.
Mr. Atkinson, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Scott Atkinson, president of Diversion Solutions.
Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'll just give you just a brief outline of how the driving diversion program works. It deals with driving after revocation and driving after suspension individuals who have received numerous citations. And the bill was designed to help support not only the local law enforcement, but also local city attorney's offices, and then also the court system. And what we're doing is we are supporting through the help of the law enforcement people that are receiving DAR, DAS suspensions, that by allowing them to get them licensed up to a driver's license again, and allowing them to drive while they're paying off their citations. And I can let you know right now, in the first 3 months of this year, that we are currently have about 1,100 people in the program. Those 1,100 people each month are paying off over $62,000 worth of old citations that they have never paid for before. And we have about 900 of those people are legally driving again and have insurance. So it is a monitoring system which also helps them pay off their fines, in short.
It sounds like a pilot program that's giving us some pretty positive feedback. Members, do we have questions for Mr. Atkinson or for the author? As I look at the bill, it looks like we're extending this also to counties, just not cities. Is that right, Representative Kelly?
Yes, Mr. Chair. What we're allowing the commissioner to do is actually to approve those counties and cities that are not in the pilot program. If they would like to apply, we're giving the commissioner the option to approve those as well. And, Mr. Chair, I can say to date, this program has put back over $500,000 to these cities. Eventually, we would like to see something like this, this private-public partnership, go statewide, but we're taking it a step at a time, and we believe this is a very solid program. I remember initially talking to Mr. Atkinson about this program, and he thought initially when they started out that if we could get a 15 to 20% success rate, that the program would be doing very well, and the program can tout a 70% success rate. So it's a fantastic program.
Thank you. Further questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against this proposed legislation? Well, seeing none, Representative Sanders, you want to renew your motion to move this to the general register?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The bill is passed to the general register.
Thank you, Mr.
Kelly.
Chair, members.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Members, the next bill on the agenda is Representative Kiffmeyer, House Bill 721. Okay, and members, this bill will have to be moved to public safety from here. I should have passed this committee. There is a, if someone would move the bill to public safety, that would be a good thing.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move House File 721 be recommended to pass and move to public safety.
Well, the bill is before us, Representative Kiffmeyer, and I noticed that there is an amendment. Is that yours?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is my amendment.
It's a delete everything amendment. Representative Murray, would you like to move the A11 amendment for us?
I would, Mr. Chair.
So moved.
Thank you. So we have the amendment in front of us, members, to get the bill in the shape the author wishes to discuss. All in, are there questions to the DE amendment? Let's vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. The bill is in the shape the author wishes to discuss it. Representative Kiffmeyer, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Transportation Committee. Very glad to be with you here today. The bill that I'm presenting to you was initially brought to me by a citizen and has to do with the fact that he has a wife who has a disability. And so frequently the certificate laying on the dash would fly out the car door. They'd scramble to find it, and with her disability, that was a real problem, real hassle, and other members in the family. So being an inventor, he invented his little gizmo. And people are finding it very, it's a very popular thing all across the country. So very popular, and what it does, it stops them from flying out the car, which helps others to, cities and other folks from replacing these certificates and lost certificates and getting in the hands of people who shouldn't have them. So great little thing, but also to be, he's a very diligent person, Mr. Krinke is, and so his desire was to be compliant with Minnesota law. And so the statute in Section 1 just removes on line 2.1 the four words, on the driver's side, because displaying something like this on the driver's side hinders visibility, the reflection in the glass. But technically, that's what the law says. Mr. Krinke, in his diligence, wants the flexibility for people with disabilities to have it somewhere else on the dash to not hinder visibility, and yet to stop it from flying away. And I'll pass this around for members to take a look at this. And they are also produced and made for national distribution as well in other states in my district in the city of Becker. So very glad to have that. Section 2 of the bill was brought forward to me by the city of Minneapolis. And so for what we want to do is promote and encourage and respect the legitimate use of handicap parking and those certificates. But on the other hand, as the years have gone by, there have been some issues cropping up with them. And so the city of Minneapolis brought the language in Section 2, and we worked together in regards to this. And basically what Section 2 does is that right now in current statute, no matter how long you have your certificate, even if it is expired and it's been a long time, you're able to have this situation where the violation is waived. And so whether it's legitimate or not, the sense here is that if it's expired by more than 90 days, that would not be the case. The last part of the section also includes, to be valid, the certificate or permit must show that it's owned by the same person that owned the expired certificate or permit displayed at the time the tag was issued. Now, this seems rather obvious, but many times when you're going to court over some of these things or are having issues, this kind of clarity and specificness is necessary. With me, Mr. Chairman, today I have two testifiers, one from the city of Minneapolis, and well, actually, both from the city of Minneapolis, or Minnesota State Council on Disabilities, right. I apologize. They will introduce themselves and explain their position on the bill.
Mr. Ouellet, welcome.
Mr. Chair, Pierre Ouellet with the City of Minneapolis. I wanted to let folks know that this issue was brought to us by members of the disability community who are having some frustration with the inability to find enough handicapped parking spaces in our ramps and other places. So the city set forth an enforcement program. However, what we found out after some more intense enforcement that there were an awful lot of expired handicap certificates being used, and when a lot of those violations were being dismissed in court or at the Violations Bureau because of the ability through the old statute to dismiss them regardless of how old the certificate was. So we approached the Minnesota Council on Persons with Disabilities and asked them to take a look at this, and they came up with the idea that that you could have an expired, you could get a dismissal of a ticket for an expired certificate, but only up to 90 days. So this basically takes away any loophole for further on. It also requires the surrendering of an expired permit if it's over 90 days. And it also disallows dismissal of a ticket if it was lost or stolen, because oftentimes these are lost. The folks who have them are good about reporting them, and now we can. You can't dismiss it if it was reported lost or stolen. And I'll stand for questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there any questions for Mr. Ouellet before we go to Diogo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Giogo. I'm the legislative specialist with the Minnesota State Council on Disability. Appreciate you taking the time to listen to me speak today. Just want to say a real quick thank you to Representative Kiffmeyer for bringing this bill forward. I'll be very brief in the interest of time. I just wanted to say that the State Council on Disability does support this bill. Obviously, it makes it easier for people to use their disability parking permit in a way that's more safe. It eliminates the visible barrier, putting it on your mirror. So this is a portion that we support. And also, disability parking can be a challenge for people when with access to finding it in certain locations. So any type of enforcement that we can see that helps curb misuse of the permits would definitely be something we support. So I'll leave it at that, and we'll stand for any questions as well.
Thank you. Members, any questions for the author or for the testifiers? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill or on behalf of the bill? Seeing no one, folks, thank you for a straightforward presentation on a good bill, and I hope that Mr. Krinke makes $1 million with his little device. When my wife was wheelchair-bound here a couple years ago for 6 months, we did have that stupid little blue card fly out the window a couple times, blow around every time we'd open the door. Both doors opened at once. That's where I learned to open one door at a time. Yeah. So that little device is a pretty cool thing, and we hope it becomes legal for you to use in Minnesota. Representative Murray, do you want to renew your motion? This is going to public safety.
I will renew my motion, Mr. Chairman.
The motion is renewed. Further discussion? Seeing none, members, let's vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The bill is passed to public safety.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I appreciate your vote.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Representative Keel, come on over. Let's talk about pickup trucks. Representative Keel, you also have an amendment, I see. Yes, okay.
I do. I wish to move both House File 1105 and the amendment.
Well, let's move 1105. We're going to move it, recommend it pass, and go to the General Register.
Okay.
And that's before us. Members, there also is an A1 amendment. Would you like to move that amendment before to put the bill in the shape you'd like to discuss it?
Yes, I would appreciate that, moving the A1 amendment also.
Members, Representative Keel moves the A1 amendment. Are there questions to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Keel, the bill is in the shape you'd like to present it to us.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is to do a little correction here or improvement on a previous bill. It defines the modified class vehicle classifications for a one-ton pickup truck and eliminates the impending provision for the registration of pickup trucks that are in that one-ton, 10-ton to 15,000 tons, so, or 1,500 tons. So anyway, but I'm going to start coughing any minute, so I am going to ask Pat McCormick to explain this bill to you. Thank you.
Good deal. Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee. I think you mean 10,000 pounds, not 10 tons.
Yes, I did, didn't I? I realized when I started to say that, I was like, it's not that heavy.
I've seen pickup trucks, but I've never seen one that big.
No.
Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And in 2008, there was a law change that would permit owners of one-ton trucks that aren't operated for commercial purposes and therefore are exempt from federal commercial motor vehicle regulations to obtain special license plates that clearly indicate non-commercial vehicle use to law enforcement and therefore would avoid any unnecessary roadside compliance checks. The goal of the legislation was to allow owners of one-ton vehicles to register in the passenger class for reported non-commercial use of the vehicle. And it addressed it by creating a distinction in registration and plate display between commercial and non-commercial pickup trucks. This bill makes some changes to the law that we felt were unintended. And if the law had moved forward as it was created, would have had an impact on registration taxes. And so we this bill does not have any fiscal impact at all. Instead, what it does is it eliminates the 2008 changes in the definition of passenger vehicle, and it defines a new term, non-commercial vehicle, and one-ton pickup truck. And by doing that, that includes pickups and vans with a gross vehicle weight of less than 10,000 pounds when its rating capacity is not unknown. And it specifies that plates issued to non-commercial vehicles bear a non-commercial inscription unless the vehicle is displaying a special plate that's authorized under Chapter 168 of the statutes. So then, for that reason, then, a one-ton pickup truck that's used for commercial purposes would display special plates and be authorized as well to use those special plates. As Representative Keel said, the amendment just made technical changes, but we believe that this will provide, will enact what the intention of the author was, which was to allow drivers that aren't driving those vehicles for commercial purposes to not be expected to comply with federal requirements that require that you have a USDOT number, and that was one of the reasons that constituents were getting pulled aside for these roadside compliance checks.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for either? Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, could you remind me, I'm sorry, I forgot where the motion is to send this, what's to do with this bill?
To the General Register.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'm just going to share a concern with you. Obviously, it would appear that a whole host of license plate bills would be germane to this bill. And so I have some concern about this bill moving forward, at least before you have your committee hearing on license plates. It's nothing against this bill specifically, but every license plate bill under the sun is going to be germane. And so I expressed that concern. I would hope that you would not, that your caucus would not move this to the floor right away, at least until after your hearing on license plates.
Okay. Noted. Thank you. It will be held over for possible inclusion as well, and we'll see if we have time yet to deal with license plates this year. But noted and noted. Further questions for either Ms. McCormick or Representative Keel? thank you for bringing something like this forward. It's as long as it, if it helps people not get pulled over by the commercial enforcement guys, it warms my heart. So I'm glad to hear that. Any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on behalf of this bill, either for or against? Seeing none, Representative Morrow's advice notwithstanding, I think we're prepared to vote. Members, all in favor of the motion, well, let's see. Representative Keel renews her motion that House File 1105, as amended, can be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Thank you.
All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is passed to the general register. Thank you. Representative Erdahl has a couple bills. Representative Erdahl, yeah, you're here. Representative Erdahl, we're going to do 186, the driver's license expiration period extended for military veterans. Would someone like to move that bill? Representative Morrow, that bill is going to the general register as well. House File 186 is before us. Representative Erdahl, I see no amendments. I see the fiscal note is blank. That's a good sign. And when you're ready,
everything's
proceed.
A good sign except where did I put my notes? Ah, there we go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight. This bill was brought to me by a constituent. I hesitate somewhat to say, but it's just a simple bill that allows the spouses and active duty personnel more time to renew their Minnesota driver's licenses if they are in active duty out of the state. Currently, renewal must happen within 90 days of discharge. This allows for a year. The specific example I give here is that after discharge, my constituent's husband was asked to continue working as a civilian on the base for a longer period than 90 days. Upon returning to Minnesota, she found that her license had expired and she would have to be retested to get it back. This change to 1 year would allow for this and other contingencies that might arise following a military discharge regarding license renewals.
Representative Erdahl, as I understand the situation that triggered this, they were actually discharged from active duty, but they were at a base outside of the state.
Right.
And did not return home for quite some time.
That's correct.
Okay. Members, questions for Representative Erdahl? Questions? Representative Leidiger, former Navy guy.
Do you know what the average is around the nation? Any chance? Did we do any kind of comparison testing on this?
Representative Erdahl?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leidiger, would you repeat that, please?
Did we do it, do we know what's going on around the nation, other states, to get an idea? Because, I mean, that's, this is a year. I think most states are like around 4 months.
Representative Erdahl?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leidiger, it was 90 days.
It was 90.
And in Minnesota. And we are basically just extending this up to a year. And we worked with the Department of Public Safety on this, and this seems to, they proposed an amendment that we added to it. This seems to work.
Did the, Mr. Chairman, I had just one more.
Representative Leidiger?
Veterans okay with that, too?
Representative Erdahl?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leidiger, yes, I believe they are.
Just go with that.
Veterans, Public Safety, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Erdahl, this is just something for you to look into. I honestly don't know the answer. I was asking House Research on this online. 2.11, Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, I just don't know the meaning of the word issued, if issued is the original time you get your license or if it should be issued or renewed. And I don't know the answer to my own question. And, Mr. Chair, I'm not trying to resolve that now. I think, Representative Erdahl, if you could just look into that to make sure that it should only be issued on line 2.11, the effective date. It's effect, it applies to licenses issued on or after that date.
Okay.
So, again, I'm not asking for an answer.
Okay.
Just
thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow. I'll check into that. Thank you.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for, against, or on behalf of the bill? Members, further questions for Representative Erdahl regarding this? Representative, I have one. Was 6 months ever considered? And if so, tell me about that.
Mr. Chairman, no.
Just a year? We went right straight to a year?
We went from 90 days to a year.
Okay. Having never served in or been discharged or held over for military service, although I do remember my son, his discharge was delayed for a while, and he was held in North Carolina for several months, 9 months perhaps afterwards. Maybe a year is functional.
I think it is, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Well, seeing none, members, I believe we're prepared to vote. Representative Morrow renews his motion that the bill be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Members, all in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The bill is passed to the General Register. Representative Erdahl. Another popular bill.
Yes.
House File 537. Members, would someone like to move House File 537? Representative Vogel?
Me.
And we're going to Public Safety, I'm sure you're surprised, would like to see this bill should it pass this committee. So your motion will be to?
Mr. Chair, so moved that this House File 537 be approved and moved to Public Safety.
Public Safety. Representative Erdahl, welcome back in front of the committee. I'd like to talk
Thank
about
you.
House File 537.
This is a bill that's been before us at least three times now. Has passed the House floor with overwhelming support. Last time, 112-13 was the vote. I'd like to thank Representative Hornstein, Chair Hornstein, for his support of my efforts. Not support of the bill, but support of the efforts. He was very helpful in the past. It's actually even in Representative Paymar's omnibus bill one time. Under current law, if one is driving in a posted 55-mile-per-hour zone and drives 65, they may be stopped, ticketed, and fined. But it doesn't go on their driving record. This bill, which has, as I said, passed with overwhelming majorities in both parties in power, applies the same conditions for a speed limit posted at 60 miles an hour, which is rated as a safer road. Traffic speed is established by engineers at 85% of the traffic flow speed. Former Commissioner Campion, citing a U of M study, reported that the number of vehicles traveling over 70 miles an hour decreased by 29% in rural highways posted at 60. Let me emphasize that I am not trying to increase speed or speeding. My position, backed by various studies, is that expanding the Dimmler Amendment does not increase speed. People are already driving at the speeds at which they are comfortable. For example, in New York State, the speed limit was increased from 65 to 65 from 55 on a thruway. Prior to the change, the average speed was 68. The subsequent speed average remained 68. The majority of drivers will not go faster than what they feel is reasonable and safe, no matter what the speed limit. A Federal Highway Administration report said that motorists intuitively make reasonable decisions when selecting the speed at which they travel. Members, think about it as you drive. You drive at the speed that you think you feel safe at. Now, when you're driving, yes, there are deterrents, but I think most of us think about getting a ticket, paying a fine. How many of you, when you are driving, consciously think to yourself, well, I'm not going to go any faster because it might go on my record? There are other factors are determining how fast you drive, where you're comfortable, and just maybe if you're going to have to pay a traffic fine. Remember, if you speed, you are still breaking the law and may be punished. This simply gives a break on driving records. It doesn't change state penalties. It does not increase driver speed. Again, studies that I've looked at firmly state that speed would not increase with this. Interestingly, federal and state studies show that the drivers most likely to get into accidents in traffic are those traveling significantly below the average speed. In 2002, the average speed on a Minnesota rural two-way highway posted at 55 miles an hour was 64.8. On a rural 65 posted, it was 73.2. Now, this provision will not increase speeds and accidents. Other factors may do that, but not changing the speed violation reporting procedures. After the Dimmler Amendment went into effect, there was little, if any, change in the decade following. Drivers simply kept driving the speed at which they were comfortable. They will do the same if the Dimmler provision is extended to 70 on a posted 60-mile-an-hour road. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Questions for Representative Erdahl regarding this bill? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. And it's good to hear your bill. As I'll just some clarification for members who might not have followed Representative Erdahl's reference. You know, me and Representative Beard are sort of those new style committee chairs. We'll hear bills even if we disagree with them. You know, there was a time on this in this chamber, maybe currently, where there's chairs of committees that will actually not hear bills that they don't agree with. It's incredible. But you know, he's a new style chair. I'm a new style chair. And so I heard this bill last year, even though I disagree with it, and I still do. And I wanted to see if there was anyone from the State Patrol that could comment on the bill. Or
actually, there are testifiers to come over and testify. But if you have a specific question for the patrol,
yes,
Major
I do.
Urquhart is here.
Actually,
Major, welcome to the committee.
See you, sir. How are you? I'll be more gentle than Major Tucker was.
Oh, how's Major Tucker doing?
He's doing great.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're like family.
My name is Major Urquhart, and I oversee special operations for the State Patrol.
Certainly. Representative Hornstein, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, Major Urquhart. So I think one of the main arguments that Representative Erdahl made was that people will drive at a speed they feel comfortable at. And so, you know, we've had some high-profile speeders. I think someone on the Vikings, I don't remember who, 90, 100 miles an hour. So, no, this is not the time and place to debate the stadium. that could be argued that was a speed this particular individual felt comfortable at. And so I just am a little nervous about you know, a driver establishing a standard rather than the state or us as a legislator. And I'm just interested to know if you have any thoughts on that. I mean, do you feel this legislation might send the wrong message about speeding, which we know, in addition to inattentiveness, is the main cause of crashes and problems on the road? So,
well, Major Urquhart, if you answer that as much of that as you care to. And we do have other people in the audience who could speak to it more if you'd like, but please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein, I'm glad you mentioned driver distraction or inattention. And most of you are aware that our crashes have, we're downward trending with our motor vehicle crashes since World War II, and we're making great strides there. And we hate to see anything that you know, may drive those numbers the wrong way, but speeding is the number two most documented contributing factor to crashes. And the other comment I will make is that our troopers in the field more often than not see that this Dimmler situation can be abused also from time to time, where they'll take high speeding violations and then plea bargain those through the Dimmler process. And we hate to see that happen when you have folks that are driving 90 miles an hour and have a plea bargain and not go on their record.
Thank you.
Follow up, further questions? I do know that I have Ms. Susie Palmer that is asked to testify on the bill. Or Eric, will that be you instead? Or Mr. Rudine, welcome. If you wish, Representative Hornstein mentioned speed being number two. I remember listening to a very well-respected traffic engineer who says, insist that speed doesn't kill, speed differential kills. And people who are moving faster or slower than the speed of the traffic generally are probably way more hazardous than the general speed of the overall traffic. If you wish to comment on that, you're welcome to, but I know you're not a traffic engineer, never even played one in high school once, but if you do have some comments you'd like to make, please feel free to go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize, Ms. Groth, couldn't stay this evening, so okay. I'll be making some remarks. With due respect to the author, we do believe that this bill will encourage speeding. And as you probably are aware, the department has been engaged with other agencies in the Towards Zero Death initiative. We had a goal for 2010 to get highway deaths below 400, and we came very close to that. We're at 412 for last year. A lot of those crashes are on rural two-lane highways, and they have among the highest fatality rate, certainly, of any of our roadways. And when speeds are higher than the predominant design speed, fatalities do increase. We are sensitive to the desire for higher speeds on some roads, and in 2005, in conjunction with Department of Public Safety, we did raise the speed limit on 930 miles of rural two-way, two-lane highways from 55 to 60 miles per hour. And that was also accompanied by more aggressive enforcement from the State Patrol. And we think that's been successful and has helped lower fatalities. As the chair mentioned, the speed differential is a significant concern. Raising the limits encouraging people to travel perhaps at 65 and increasing that differential could certainly lead to more severe traffic accidents, which is a concern to the department.
Thank you, Mr. Rudin. Questions for Mr. Rudin or for the author? Representative Biskins, were you up first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, does your bill in any way, shape, or form change the speed limits on any road throughout the state of Minnesota?
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, no, it does not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Biskins. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Erdahl, does your bill in any way, shape, or form change the fine for violating the speed, posted speed limit in any road in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, no, it does not.
Okay. One
follow-up, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Erdahl, do you think our ramp lights should be turned off? Just a question.
I missed the question. Did you hear it?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it had to do with ramp lights. I'm not a real ramp light authority, but I'm willing to study.
Okay. Representative Benson, do you care to follow that?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe this is rhetorical, too, because I'm sure you've probably answered it already. But, I mean, just in light of the fact that when we passed this bill before, and it was 55, we've steadily seen a reduction in the number of deaths and fatalities. And a lot of that's due to enforcement, you've said, right? So what makes you think that just adding the same bill to the 60-mile-an-hour roads will lead to greater deaths? I mean, we've had the bill, and we've shown a reduction, and we're just increasing it by 5 mile an hour. So why would you think that would lead to? Thank you.
Your question is directed to Mr. Rudin.
Yes,
Mr. Rudin. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of those reductions in deaths have come because of other reasons, and we do believe that if people know they can sort of get away with speeding, they will be encouraged to travel faster. One thing I intended to mention is that certainly crash severity is a function of speed, and doubling the speed of a car, stopping distance is quadrupled. So obviously the more quickly you're traveling, the longer your reaction time to avoid accidents as well.
Just a
follow-up, Representative Benson.
But we don't have any data that shows that when we passed the bill this last time that it led to any deaths. We've still seen it. I mean, you said in your testimony there that, of course, there are other contributing factors, but we don't have any data that shows that it did lead to more deaths.
Mr. Rudin, can you speak to that?
Mr. Chair, you're right, I can't provide direct evidence, but I think if you speak, especially with law enforcement personnel, they will tell you that the traveling public believes there's a certain cushion they can get away with going over the speed limit. And this bill, I think, will increase the perception that you can sort of get away with going faster than the speed limit.
Further follow-up? Representative Benson?
Just a statement, to be perfectly honest. I didn't know I didn't have a cushion on the 60. So I would imagine there's many in the traveling public that didn't know that either. So thank you.
We'll take that as a statement, not a question. Further questions for either the testifier or the author of the bill? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak for or against the bill? Thank you, Mr. Redeem. Ma'am, if you'd have a seat and identify yourself for the committee and the record, you could proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Susie Palmer. I'm the Traffic Safety Program Manager with the Office of Traffic Safety in the Department of Public Safety. And I just have a few things I'd like you to consider when you're thinking about this bill. The first one is, as the patrol's already told you, that speed is one of the leading contributors to crashes in which someone dies. And in particular, for people under the age of 30. For those of us, if you just look at the total population of those of us who, those people who died, about 28% of those people, speed was involved in those crashes. If you look at those under the age of 30, it goes up to 46% of those crashes speed was involved in. So it's a problem that is particularly a problem for youth. And the leading cause of death in Minnesota for people under the age of 34 is traffic crashes. And this is just another issue in causing that to happen. Higher speeds mean greater chance of a loss of control, increased stopping distance, increased crash severity when they do happen. So speeding affects both the probability of the crash and the severity of a crash when it does happen. So I'd like to urge you to not pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions for Ms. Palmer? Questions for Ms. Palmer? Now, Ms. Palmer, do I understand you're speaking for the department, or are you speaking
Correct.
For yourself?
For the department.
Good. Thank you. Further questions for the author? Sir, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Nachbar from the Brain Injury Association of Minnesota, and we oppose this. For the record, just so folks know, that traffic crashes are the second leading cause of brain injury in Minnesota, but the leading cause for youth. And I understand the central question here isn't whether we're changing the speed limit or the law. The question is what happens with insurance. And so from a couple of different perspectives, I guess you have to ask yourself, you know, if insurance companies don't have access to the information in terms of speed, then how do they, you know, adjust all of our rates? And secondly, I think the most important question to determine, and I'm not a researcher, is whether or not the fear of, you know, increased insurance rates is an actual deterrent to speeding. I think that's the central issue that we've seen with the Dimmer Amendment and this. And as we, if you believe that fear of getting caught and fear of your insurance rates going up is a deterrent to speeding, I think that's the central question about whether or not it will actually lead to increased speed. So for that matter, we'd like to keep our roads safer. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Nachbar? Representative Birdall, a comment or a question for the
team? I guess a closing comment.
Okay.
And, you know, I appreciate the concerns by others. And if I felt that what I'm doing, what I'm attempting to do, was going to cause more deaths because of speeding, if I felt it was going to cause more brain injuries because of speeding, I wouldn't do this. But I am convinced that there is no evidence that indicates that changing this law is going to cause these things to happen. As has been indicated, it doesn't change the speed limit, it doesn't change the fines, and all studies that I've read indicate that people simply drive where they are comfortable. I'll go back again to the New York example. When the speed limit was changed from 55 to 65, the average speed limit on that, the average speed on that thruway remained the same, 68. because that's where people were comfortable driving. And once again, people aren't making a conscious decision that they are going to drive faster or slower because it goes on their record or not. It's other things that deter speed and other things that cause speed.
Thank you for comments. Further questions for the author of the bill? Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, Representative Vogel renews his motion that we pass this bill to a state or public safety and crime prevention policy and finance committee. Representative Leidiger, were you about to ask a question?
Well, sir.
Okay. All those in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is passed to public safety. Representative Johnson.
I don't believe in that thing. Yes.
Representative Johnson, welcome to the committee. Would somebody like to move? Let's give it to Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson, we'd like to move this bill, and it needs to go to government operations, as they're asking for the bill.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. The bill is before us, House File 554. Representative Johnson, it's good to have you in front of the committee. If you'll excuse me for just a moment, I ask Ms. Zuers, is there to be a fiscal note with this bill, or did we determine there was not one?
Mr. Chair and members, the fiscal note has been requested, but it is not completed at this time. The Department of Transportation has signed off on the note, and there isn't a cost for the Department of Transportation. The other agency on the note is the legislature, and based on the preliminary information, it looks like there may be a general fund cost associated with it.
Can that be through the Legislative Coordinating Commission?
Mr. Chair and members, yes.
Okay. We have time then on this one. We'll go to government operations, and we'll wait for the fiscal note to catch up. Representative Johnson, good luck with the fiscal note thing. If you'd like to explain your bill, that would be good.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the opportunity to present the bill. What it does is it moves the expiration date for the Parkway Commission from 2012 to 2016, simply. And I thought I'd give the members just a little background what the Parkway Commission is. The Mississippi Parkway Commission is comprised of 15 appointed members. Four of those are from the legislature, two from the House, two from the Senate. On the House side right now, it's myself, I'm the current chair, and Brandon Peterson's the other person. It was Representative Davids. On the Senate side, it's Senator Sendrum and Senator Pappas. And there's also members from the Department of Transportation, Department of Natural Resources, Agriculture, Historical Society, Explore Minnesota Tourism, and also five regionally appointed citizens. Now, the mission is twofold. One is to promote, preserve, and enhance the resources of the Mississippi River Valley, and then secondly, to develop the highways and amenities of Great River Road. Our budget, as it was alluded to, I guess, is found in the Legislative Coordinating Commission, which is in the state government finance bill, so that's kind of where that lies. Now, the Parkway Commission is part of a national 10-state Mississippi River Parkway Commission. The concept of the National Great River Road was started back in 1938, and it's been in state statute here in Minnesota as a commission since 1963, so that's how long it's been around, since 1963. We meet quarterly. The commission, the 15-member commission, meets quarterly, and we meet at least once a year with the other 10 states to talk about issues relative to the Great River Road and the Mississippi River Valley area. The basic point of the commission is to provide a unified voice and a place of communication for the all the communities and counties along the 575-mile river. Through the state of Minnesota anyway. There's 21 Minnesota counties, 60 communities, and 6 destination areas. And if you go to the Parkway Commission website, go online and type in Mississippi River Parkway Commission, you'll see the 6 destination areas. And given the fact there's so many communities, counties, and areas involved with the river, this Parkway Commission provides the opportunity to come together as a group to talk about what's going on in the different communities and how we can work together to make the Mississippi River a great tourist destination for the state and to bring folks in to see what we have along the river for the different communities. Some of the things we do is provide information resources to travelers via our website, and again, I'd recommend you take a look at our website. Our publications, we respond directly to inquiries all along the river. We provide materials and information to 50 community tourism offices and travel information cities, as well as our state and national parks and interpretive centers. One of the things that the Parkway Commission does, because we're the byway organization for the Great River Road, Great River Road is fortunate to be a national scenic byway, and that's in a very important status, because what that does is allows us to be eligible for federal grant money. And to date, over the last 15 years or so, we brought in about $4 million in federal scenic byway grants for a variety of projects. The feds provide about 80% of the funding, and then we help provide the match money for those projects. So just to sum up, members, the commission is the point of communication, a unified voice for the Great River Road and also the River Valley. We want to make sure that tourism stays strong, and we do what we can to make sure that occurs. One of the projects we're working on right now, in fact, I saw a bill, I think it was presented by King Banyan, on this Mississippi River Trail. We're in the process of coordinating with the other 10 states, as well as the different technical folks in the state. A bike trail that starts at Lake Itasca, goes to the different communities along the river, and then down to the delta down in the Mississippi. So that's an example of one of the projects they're working with that the commission is oriented towards. So thank you for the opportunity to say a few words, and that is the Parkway Commission.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I should just point out, Representative Erdahl, if you don't stop pestering the members of the committee, we could move to reconsider your bill. So if I take it out in the alcove, that would be a good thing, Representative. Never heard that before, have you?
Mr. Chair especially brings no cheeseburgers.
Oh, there you go. The
Nutrition Commission does meet tonight.
Let's see. Okay, back on track here, members. I'm sorry I derailed us there for a moment. Questions for Representative Johnson about extending the sunset on the Parkway Commission? Representative Schmansky?
Representative Biskins was first.
Representative Biskins, I'm sorry. I didn't.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Johnson, does this commission currently have a reserve?
A reserve. Reserve. Representative Johnson?
We do not have a reserve. We have a budget of approximately $66,000 per year.
Representative Biskins, follow up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Representative Johnson, in 161.1419, it does allow you, Subdivision 3A allows you to accept gifts, grants, and endowments. Are you saying that at this point the Commission has no reserve, no endowments? You're operating basically on the $66,000 a year appropriation?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, that's correct. We just set up with the 10 state commission, however, an endowment that we're hoping to help fund all the different commissions along the river, but I don't think that has much in its fund at this point.
Follow-up, Representative Biskins.
Well, just more. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a number of questions about this commission. All right. Representative Johnson, the commission, I see, does have investigatory powers, and, in fact, it's been given by the legislature subpoena power. Can you tell this committee how many times the commission has actually used its subpoena power?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, to my knowledge, it has not used subpoena power.
Okay. Before you proceed, Representative Biskins, Ms. Zewers, do you have something to comment on the endowment process?
Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins, one of the things that's noted in the preliminary fiscal note is that the Commission relies on federal and local grants to augment its programs as well, besides general fund dollars.
Okay, thank you for the contribution. Representative Biskins, follow up?
Thank you. And Thank you for that information. Yeah, I do have follow-up. One final question is on entering into contracts. I see we have allowed this commission to statutorily enter into contracts. Representative Johnson, can you tell the committee how many contracts the commission is currently under?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, we currently have one contract with the folks that provide our professional technical service. They're essentially our administrative contact.
Follow-up, Representative?
Just one final question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, as we are in our current budget crisis, as some would say, if the legislature chooses not to appropriate the money, do you believe that not only would the commission disband, but people would stop talking to each other who have interest in the Mississippi River from Itasca to the Gulf of Mexico?
Representative Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins, I certainly think our commission is more powerful and more effective providing tourism for the state and coordinating projects with the money in hand.
Representative?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, my question was, without the money, would you disband?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I guess as a chair, I'd have to call the 15-member commission together and talk about what the next move is and see what they wanted to do.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Johnson, we're extending the expiration date on this commission. Was there a previous expiration date before the current date of June 30th, 2012? And what's the anticipated? Is this the final extension of this expiration date, or do you anticipate this going on in the future?
Representative Johnson, give us a brief history of the renewals.
Mr. Chair, Representative Szymanski, I can't say for sure when this renewal process started. I know it's been at least the time prior there was a renewal in place. So this is, if not the second time, the third or so.
Representative?
I think that, sorry, Mr. Chair, I think the idea is to provide further oversight from the legislature, give a chance to say what we're doing and explain ourselves.
Okay,
fair enough.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Johnson, you had mentioned that there's bipartisan membership on this. I think you said that Representative Davids and Senator Senjum are involved. This commission has always been bipartisan. I imagine that the last time you sought a similar renewal would have been Governor Pawlenty signing the bill. I know you've come before this committee before. I don't remember how, 4 years ago maybe. So if you could just, you know, confirm that there's a history of bipartisan support and bipartisan membership on the commission.
Representative Johnson, I remember 4 years ago doing this too. In 2008, we moved it to 2012, I think. So
sounds right.
Proceed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, that is correct. I mean, that's one of the dynamics that this commission prides itself on is its nonpartisan pursuit of the health of the River Valley as well as the promotion of tourism and Great River Road. So that has been the history and the spirit of the commission is one of bipartisan work together to get something done for the state.
Thank you. Follow up? Further questions for Representative Johnson? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for, against, or about this bill? Seeing no one coming down, Representative Nelson renews his motion that we pass this bill to government operations, where I'll look forward to seeing you again, Representative Johnson.
Me too.
Further discussion? And Representative Nelson. Hearing none, let's vote. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is on its way to government operations.
Thank you.
Representative Enzel, thank you for your patience. Representative Gauthier, would you like to move House File 724? And this bill passes and moves to general register, although we'll probably include it in the omnibus bill also. That's Representative Gauthier's motion.
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Okay. The bill is before us. Representative Enzel, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. Members, this is a turnback bill. It's necessary to implement an agreement that has been entered into between MnDOT and the Coochaching County Board. It would turn back a trunk highway number 332 back to the county. The stretch of highway would then become part of the county state aid highway system and would be under the jurisdiction of Cooch County. There is an agreement. There is no opposition back home. And this would be implemented with a one-time payment from the turnback account, county turnback account, from the state to Coochaching County. That essentially is the bill.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Ansel? Representative Leidiger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What are the amounts of money that we're talking about for this transfer? I don't know anything about. What is it somewhere?
Representative Leidiger, if you wanted to hold that question for just a moment, I think MnDOT is here to testify about this bill and about the process of turnbacks, which for the freshman, this actually is pretty routine. It happens regularly. But Mr. Rudine will enlighten us on why we have to have legislation to do it and all we want to know about it. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Eric Rudine, Government Affairs. And you're correct that we have turnback bills pretty much every year. Typically, they would be an agency bill, but because the agreement from the county came somewhat late in the process this year, it was just too late for MnDOT to pursue this as an agency initiative. But we're fully supportive of the legislation. And if you're not aware, all of trunk highways are actually listed in state statute, and so when we want to turn one back to county or city jurisdiction, we have to amend state statute to make that happen. Turnback funding is provided in the budget bills. The budget bills do not identify specific turnback projects, but there's a sort of pool of turnback funds available that MnDOT Office of State Aid, in partnership with the cities and counties, determine how to spend those funds on a yearly basis. And this project, you know, has gone through that process and been approved through that process as well.
Okay. Questions? Representative Szymanski was first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rudine, how many miles of highway are we talking about here?
Either Representative Ansel or Mr. Rudine?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I'm not familiar with that part of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rudine. I believe it's only about a 3 or 4 mile, 4 miles, but it's in... it's in International Falls, and so I believe this part is... There was a bill last year to do a separate part of this turnback, and part of it's going to the city, which I think was last year's legislation. So that portion being rehabilitated to urban standards, and this portion, I think, is outside of the city limits, so it's not being upgraded to urban standards. But also, I should just say that anytime the state turns back a portion to a city or a county, we first bring the road up to state aid standards, mm-hmm. or if the road is in pretty good shape today, then what we'll do is we'll reach a financial agreement with the local unit of government to give them a lump sum payment that they can sort of hold in reserve until such time as the road needs to be rehabilitated.
Follow up, Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Chairman. Then the $3.5 million is to bring that road up to that standard, is that correct?
Mr. Rudine?
Mr. Chair, that's correct, and it's 4.5 miles, I understand, is the actual
thank you.
Road. Follow-up, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess this is more of a question to enlighten the new members on the committee, is what is the advantages of turning it back? What is the advantages to the state turning it back, and what are the advantages to the county of having it turned back to them?
Mr. Rudine, a teaching moment.
Mr. Chair, typically these routes that we're turning back are not high priorities on the state trunk highway system, but they can be very high priorities for the local community, but they may not have the traffic count or the heavy commercial vehicle count to be high on MnDOT's priority list. So by turning them back to a local jurisdiction, they're able to sort of put it at the top of their list, and it rids the state of obviously the ongoing maintenance of a portion of Trunk Highway.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, in the agreement itself, it clearly indicates that MnDOT and the county are in agreement that this stretch of road is more appropriately within the jurisdiction of the county than the state.
Okay. Representative Leidiger.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Can the money be used for any other purposes, or is it strictly for the road maintenance?
Mr. Rudin?
Mr. Chair and Representative Leidiger, there is a portion of the 5% flexible account that comes off of the highway user funds that the legislature designates to be used for turnbacks. And so that money is only available for turnbacks. And I'm sorry, maybe I didn't understand.
Clarify your question. I think
thinking
is if the road is in pretty good shape and is turned back,
it would
a pot of money is set aside or agreed to.
Right.
Can the city or county use it for anything else besides that?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and Representative Leiter. No, they couldn't use it for anything else. We signed in all cases with turnbacks, we sign agreements, memorandum of understanding with either the city or the county, in this case the county, specifying that this money can only be used for that portion of roadway.
Thank you. Clarified. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Van Zelk, I know that turnbacks are typically bipartisan in nature, and, you know, we pretty much get along on that point.
Representative Van Zelk.
I'm just concerned about potential property tax impacts up on the range. You know, Do you see any possibility, Representative, if the county now is going to have to take care of this road?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins, I didn't want to get into the weeds tonight, but this International Falls and Kuching County are not within the taconite relief area and would not otherwise be affected by any of our previous conversation that we've had today.
A great answer, Representative Wanzels. Thank you. You don't have a follow-up, Representative Biskins, do you? Good. Thank you. Further discussion to the bill? Anybody else feel compelled to testify for, against, or about this legislation? Seeing none, members, Representative Gauthier removes his motion that this be passed to the General Register, and we will hold it for possible inclusion as well.
Thank you very much.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The bill is passed. Members, the last bill, I told you I was going to have you out here at 45, but members, there are folks who have come to testify about the Dan Patch prohibition repeal or lifting the gag order. I'm just going to present it from this position right here because we're not going to pass this bill tonight. We're going to hold it over for possible inclusion, so we're not going to vote on it. Members, several years ago, I'm told in lore of this place, in the middle of the night, actually in a conference committee, folks who did not want any discussion about the Dan Patch line, which it's colloquially called, runs from Northfield through Savage, Bloomington, Edina, up into, actually terminates one portion of it at Twinsville, where there is, of course, a rail transit station. That line is prohibited in statute from being considered, planned, talked about, anything, studied by any governmental entity for any possible inclusion in a railroad passenger capacity in any way, shape, or form. Now, you all know how your chairman feels about the efficiency of railroad passenger service. So my intention isn't to promote this line as a possible rail line, but simply in the cause of good government, I would like this gag order lifted. That is the genesis and the entire intent of House File 587. However, I've been notified that there are a few people who would like to speak otherwise on the bill, and so unless you have questions of me, pretend I'm testifying at the moment presenting the bill. Seeing none, I will invite a couple people forward, and I have Paul McCullough. Are you Mr. McCullough?
Yes, I'm Paul McCullough, and this is Doug Gross.
Okay. Gentlemen, if you would identify yourself for the record and make your comments about why you think this is a good idea or otherwise, we would like to hear your testimony.
maybe
again,
standard question.
My name's Paul McCullough. Live in the city of Bloomington, and Representative Mazurow represents our area.
I'm Doug Bruce in Bloomington. I served on the Dan Patch commuter rail feasibility study representing Bloomington.
Okay. I will be very respectful of your time. I think it's important to look at a little bit of the history before I make a petition or a suggestion that you defeat this bill. A little history. The state has studied this rail line. In 2001, $400,000 was spent to look at the feasibility of Dan Patrick commuter rail. I guess I will jump over some of the findings because, as I understand, the point isn't to debate whether Dan Patch should be commuter rail. It's whether the prohibition on studying should be lifted. But it is a little important, I think, to understand that the prohibition wasn't enacted because the neighbors didn't want it. The prohibition was enacted based specifically on the findings of the study. At that time, there was the study indicated that 3,700 riders would ride the Dan Patch, and the capital cost would be about $461 million. $461 million back in 2001. Obviously, the operating costs would occur on that rail line, just as it does now with the North Star. Many communities involved. The Dan Patch rail line is different than the North Star rail line itself. North Star is a freight line, two tracks. Dan Patch is a very quietly, lightly used, very unimproved rail line. It is used for freight right now, but very light freight use. There were 2,300 people that attended the public hearings on the Dan Patch. 70% were opposed to that. The bottom line in the executive study was that the costs and the real and perceived negative impacts make improvement impractical at this time. The study went on to say that after North Star and after the Red Rock rail lines were up and were in operation for a year, you could look at that commuter rail line experience and make a determination if you wanted to look at Dan Patch again. So, the prohibition on the studying of Dan Patch was not done by our legislators back in 2002 just because the neighbors were opposed. It was introduced and passed based on the executive study, which recommended not to move ahead with Dan Patch until after all the lines were up and running. So all I'm saying is those conditions don't exist right now. And when they do, then that would be an appropriate time if it was decided by this body to repeal that law to do that. This is a significant issue for our neighborhoods. As I mentioned, we had over 2,300 people participate in discussions about it, and 70% were opposed. And I can tell you that I have not done the survey, and I don't keep contact with all those people, but my opinion is that the opposition would make the lines the same. The houses are there. The conditions are the same. Doug?
Mr. Bruce, is it?
Yes, Douglas Bruce.
Please.
Yes, thank you. I served on the group that did the study, the $400,000, and I've got all sorts of data here and information if you want to go through it. But I have the summary here, and I'll touch on it a little bit. But I'd like to indicate who is involved. For example, Mike Turner, who was the chair of the Dakota County Commissioners, chaired the group, but Dakota County was the fiscal agent for this. Charlie, what is it, Chitterton, the fellow from Burnsville who's just recently passed away, was a part of that. Deb Skinner, St. Louis Park, myself, Lori McNamara, Edina, Larry, Steve King, Savage, Jim Dixon, Northfield, Gordon Hughes, Edina, Gail Dorfman from Hennepin County. We're all part of this process. And I will just quickly touch on a couple of items in this report. It was an extensive study because we looked at station locations, ridership, capital operations, operating costs, joint operation with freight lines, community impacts, those kinds of things. So it was an extensive one. It was, in, as you indicated, the number of trips that were involved, the subsidization of those trips, let's see, was found to be about $26 per trip for the folks. And we went on to touch on, let's see, we had, you touched on the operating. Oh, there's 1,662 residential parcels adjacent to the tracks. Presently, those are valued at $240 million. That was the information given by the cities at that time. And I'll get back to that at the very end here. They basically said in findings, C findings, impact on property values, acquisition of adjacent residential property should be included as a project cost and should not be considered optional, was one of the findings in our recommendation. Another was that the cost of landscaping barriers should be included as project mitigation costs and should not be seen as optional. As all indicated, the recommendation is the real and perceived adverse impacts to adjoining land use and cost of improving the right-of-way and operating the system make this corridor improvements impractical at this time. We found out that the whole system needed to be completely redone. There wasn't anything to be salvaged. Complete rebuild. MnDOT, Metropolitan Council, and the cities and counties within the corridor should first explore and promote other transit improvements. Goes on to say, Transit Plan 2020 Master Plan identifies Dan Patch following North Star and Red Rock. Prior to pursuing Dan Patch, North Star and Red Rock results impact should be evaluated. After 1 year of North Star and Red Rock operation, conduct a statistically valid survey of the Dan Patch corridor. Translate that into what some of those individuals in the committee said. These are quotes that Mike Turner had and are found in one of the newspapers following our completion of our study. Turner, who chairs the I-35W Solutions Alliance, said the study will cost more than $500,000 at the time and illustrates that the line would need $26 per trip subsidy to function. It just doesn't make sense to proceed with it, Turner said, to spend more tax money on this folly. I can't justify spending more money on it. Turner said he was an advocate of the line originally, but many variables led to his change of heart, economics notwithstanding. Quote, we need to put our tax dollars where it's more useful, he said. He pointed to bus rapid transit along 35W corridor, the Cedar Avenue corridor, as much better options than commuter rail on the Dan Patch line. He said, quote, we're all visionaries, but we all need to look at reality, he said. We can't fund what we have now. How can we fund new options? Mary Holzberg from Lakeville. I'm not a big rail proponent, she said. It's wickedly expensive, and most of the time the bus service can accomplish the same at a fraction of the capital subsidies. So for the reasons that we were able to find, we thought it made sense not to proceed, but to proceed with local input, local data, once the Red Rock and North Star were up and functioning. So I think that's what the legislature did, was to say, yes, we agree with that. It's certainly consistent with the findings of our group to, at that time, reopen the subject, it would be very appropriate to do.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce. Further comments or members, do you have questions for the testifiers? I can think of a couple, but Representative Nelson, would you like to proceed?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't think this is a question, more of a comment. I think the chair and I, we both came in at the year after this was passed, and while we may be on opposite sides of the transit debate, I think, just like with my vote earlier this year on the lifting the moratorium on nuclear, I think that this is something that I would agree we should lift the moratorium on talking about this, because we as the legislature should be able to talk about and look into things that we want to. I agree at this time that it may not be a feasible line. It may not be even in the top 10 of lines that we want to look at if we were pursuing and had the money to pursue more lines. But the idea that we're gagged and not being able to talk about it is something I think we should not do as legislature. And I, for that reason, I would vote to, I would support removing the support the bill to remove the gag.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Morrow? Okay. Representative Hornstein, did I see your hand?
Yeah, but it might have been that Representative Diskins raised his before I did. Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to briefly thank you for bringing this forward. I strongly support you in this for the reasons that Representative Nelson said. You know, this was already 10 years ago. I don't think this bill is about necessarily the merits or not of the line, and I actually was involved in that promoting the bus rapid transit on 35W, but to say that you can't talk about something, it sets a really bad precedent, and so I think it set a bad precedent then, and you're absolutely correct, Mr. Chairman, to, again, whether you like this or not, whether you support commuter rail or not, to say to the legislature you can't talk about something, and times change, and, you know, we have all kinds of circumstances that are different than they were 10 years ago, and so, including what I think the witness has said, is that if the legislature wanted to wait for other commuter lines to be built, well, one has been, and we could potentially have more. So that just makes the case for your bill. So thank you.
Representative Hornstein and members, it's I hope that I'm known for letting the facts fall where they fall. So we deal in the facts. Being able to talk about it is just something it's something that strikes me as just good governance. You know, I've quoted my grandpa before when I say, if it's a good idea today, it'll still be a good idea in the morning. Well, the corollary is also true. If it's a bad idea today, it'll probably still be a bad idea in the morning. But at least we ought to be able to run the numbers again and have the chat. And 10 years on, sometimes things change. That could happen. So this is more about governance philosophy than about whether Dan Patch has changed or whether we should buy a whole bunch of properties next to this one that, oh, by the way, we didn't do when we planned for Central Corridor or Hiawatha. I'm just noticing the double standard there and commenting on it. Representative Biskins, you have a comment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do. And, you know, I support, you know, for the testifiers here, you know, I couldn't agree more with you in the lunacy of creating a Dan Patch line. Right. However, what the gag order currently does is it doesn't allow us to continue to put that information before people. Right? And so now what the gag order does is leaves in people's minds some doubts as to whether or not this makes sense. Well, this makes absolutely no sense. And so if we remove this, every time they bring the issue up, you know, we can bring your studies again and show them. This makes no sense. Right? However, right now, because we can't even talk about it, we don't have the opportunity to continue to bring the data in front of people. And so, I don't support commuter rail in any way, shape, or form, I think it's wildly expensive, I still support this bill so that we can continue to show the data that you spent so much time putting together to show the infeasibility of this line.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? I see a few folks lining up. As you come down, would you gentlemen make way for a couple other testifiers? Representative Vogel, did you have a comment or a question as well?
I,
I just had a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bell, go ahead.
My question is, with the if we pass this bill, we're not appropriating any money, and we're not saying that we're going to allow any money to be appropriated to do another study. Wayne,
correct. We've already spent. To be clear, we're not passing this bill tonight. We're going to lay it over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill, in which case we'll have to have this discussion again and actually vote to include it in a bill or amend it in some way or something like that if the bill moves forward. But no, there's no money attached to this bill as you see it here tonight. It merely strikes language. It's in statute. Representative Leidinger.
Yes. Very quick, and this is really a question for you, sir. We have spent $400,000 many years ago, and we've never been able to talk about the results of this. Is this what I'm kind of, or?
Representative Leidinger, several years ago, many years ago, there was a study done on this on several corridors. This was one, and there was a considerable amount of money spent creating quite a volume of a report. I've seen the executive summary. I've never read the report. Now, though, when that happened, the legislature in 2002, I believe, actually said no metropolitan planning agency can plan for, study, spend any more money considering, or anything like that. So, yeah, we talk about it all the time, but there can be no official chatter about whether this is a good idea or not. And that brings its own mystique to the whole project. Why does this one have a gag on it? Which, of course, gets people chattering even more. So just kind of an observation. Representative Gauthier, I'm sorry, you were last on the list here.
Oh, thank you. Well, I guess I reaffirm my belief in miracles because Representative Biskin and I are going to agree on this. And I, being a big proponent of trains, I think we voted similar on one of the amendments on the education bill, too. But anyway, I just, it makes no sense to gag anybody on anything, so that's where I'm at, and we should get on with the testimony. And
gentlemen, you're standing between us and bed, so
Mr. Chairman,
that in mind, Bob, please proceed. Identify yourself with the table.
Bob Vanosik with the Minnesota Intercounty Association. In a nutshell, we believe the legislature should make informed decisions on when you're deliberating on whether or not a proposed transitway ought to be developed or not. Allowing information to be gathered, both pro and con, is certainly preferable to making an arbitrary decision in the absence of relevant data.
Thank you for your comment. Senator Tennyson, would you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Robert Tennyson. I'm an attorney in Minneapolis, and I represent the I-35W Solutions Alliance, which you heard about here, and I have for a long time, going back before even Mike Turner to Dan McElroy. We were involved in the original study, and as the chairman pointed out, there was the legislature back in the 90s ordered a study of all of the rail lines that were being abandoned to look at them, see whether any feasibility. This was one of those that was in the category, was studied, and you got the report. I don't recall that the report said that they should have a gag order, but it did go into the numbers, and it certainly wasn't feasible at that time. There was quite a bit of political opposition to it at the time, and some people on the line. And as I recall, Senator Belanger was very instrumental in getting that gag order put in place. The 35W Solutions Alliance has adopted legislative position supporting legislation to eliminate the gag rule. So we support your legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Todd, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Todd Olson, Metro Cities. I don't want to just say ditto, but we also have a policy that strictly supports the repeal of the gag order.
Questions for these gentlemen at all, members? Okay. Anyone else in the audience feel compelled to speak about this subject? Okay, Mr. Bruce, Mr. McConnell, thank you for coming and testifying this evening. As I mentioned, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion,
okay.
And if we are going to consider it further, you'll be notified and have a chance to speak again, okay? Members, is there anything else to come before us tonight? Seeing none, I will declare us adjourned.
Thank you
for your attendance and for your help, members.